Good morning. This is an emergency session of the board to, we'll get into that in a moment. But first of all, I'd ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Say with me, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have public comment. I have three requests. Eric Greening first, Ben DeFada, and Gil McPherson. I'm sorry, Jim, did you want to?
We'll
go right after this.
Good morning. Happy third or fourth day of Christmas, New Year's Epiphany. It's all coming. I know some of this verges on what you're going to be talking about, but I'm actually asking for a separate public hearing on the sewage spills, the ability of our county to track where it goes, and the ability to truly assess the damage under Health and Safety Code 5412.5 so that we can assess said damage and that the county can be made whole. Health and Safety Code 5412.5 says essentially that anyone whose sewage overflows into any waters of the state that may cause contamination of waters used in a water contact sport, any such waters that essentially the discharger, without regard to intent or negligence — you don't have to prove intent or negligence, it's just that the discharge happened — then the discharger shall reimburse the local health officer or the environmental health department for all of the costs involved with essentially mitigation and protection of public safety pursuant to that spill. This goes beyond simply the declaration that's on your plate today, and I would like to see a separate public hearing about that with a full accounting of what information we have as to the extent of the damage. Perhaps later another hearing will be called for when the water event report is completed pursuant to Water Code 13193. I would hope that would be made public and be made the subject of a hearing. What lessons can the county learn from this? We can't just take it for granted that every time we get a lot of rain, sewage is going to spill and contaminate the habitat and the places where people are. We just can't take it for granted. And we also need to be sure, given that the county is about to embark on construction of a sewage treatment facility, that whatever mistakes have been made in other sewage treatment facilities are not made in a facility that is almost adjacent to some of the most protected waters in the state, a marine protected area of Morro Bay East. Thank you.
Mr. DeFada, followed by Gil McPherson, please.
Morning, gentlemen. Ben DeFada here from Los Osos. And for 5 years, I've been speaking here, and I have to tell you, I told you so. Los Osos, over 900 manholes next to the bay, Precious Bay. And you're using the system that Julius Caesar used. And that was a long time ago, and I'm sure things have gotten to be much better, 100 times better, the rules and regulations. And I don't know what to tell you. We're not here. We're not an obstructionist. We're trying to get a good system for Mr. Gibson's $200 million antiquated, stinking sewer. Go to a closed system that's half the cost, or what if it's a quarter of the cost or a tenth of the cost of savings? Get rid of that lousy gravity system. Get rid of the same old contractors you use over and over who are double dipping. That's another subject. But anyway, I rush down here and my heart is pounding away. Please do the right thing for us. We can't afford it. One-third of the people in Los Osos are renters. And the reason they're renters in 90% of the time is because they can't afford a house. And they have really no say in this. I thank you very much. Happy New Year to you.
Gil McPherson, and then Chuck Susana, please.
Good morning. I know that this broke up everyone's week, but with the rains, I guess you know that that the systems that we have in place, are many of them are old. They're designed to fail, in fact. In the old days, it was okay for a surcharge sewer to relieve itself in somebody's backyard or in the front yard or in the street. Today, that's no longer the case. There's a zero tolerance. There's no acts of God. Everything can be or should be prepared for. And so I just want to say to you that when you design Los Osos, I have to agree very strongly with everybody that's been saying the design for Los Osos has to be for 21st century conditions. We are a low-lying area. It's a design that's destined to fail. I also want to add that I agree with Eric on the issue of a public hearing, and that as you move into your after-action reviews and reports, that you don't play a blame game, that you really look for cause and effect and solutions and corrections, and not get into the blame game. But I do urge you, look again at what you're going to put into Los Osos. There were no sewer spills from the septic tanks. There is treatment there, by the way. But there were no spills, and in fact, a step collection system does not back up into homes, does not have manholes surcharging, overflowing, and it doesn't have the pumping scheme. Gravity systems pump. In many of these cases across the state, it was pump stations that were overwhelmed. And they were overwhelmed because people go out and pull a manhole cover to drain a street. Anyway, I sent a lot of documents to you, Mr. Meacham, and I don't expect you to read them all, but they're examples of really good systems in place. They're based on the law, based on a lot of work that's been done by others that have been in your situation. I've been in the hip waders and presided over many spills, many flooded areas in along the Santa Ana River. Over 2 decades, and lots of good photos and lots of good experience. But I just wanted to share that with you and make sure that you knew that the community is on your side. We're not fighting against you. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope to see a public hearing and more public information and education on how to avoid these problems in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Sassanian, and my last request, Lucy from Oceano.
Good morning, Chuck Sassania, resident of a very low-lying area in Los Osos. How long are we just going to accept that's the way we've always done it? Our public works department is comfortable with leaky sewers. We're just going to build another one. The shredder gets it. Eric Greening gets it. We can't just accept business as usual. There was a common theme throughout the county the past couple weeks. Leaky gravity sewers. It's not just that they leak out and pollute. They leak in and overwhelm lift stations. They can't deal with rain. A closed collection system, completely sealed. Can't leak in, can't leak out. No backups in your house, no sewage in your creeks, no warning people to get out of the ocean. How long does it go on just to protect the egos and the way we've always done business? The shame in Los Osos is you've been offered information on a system that could save tens of millions of dollars. You could have your Willow Road interchange and the Los Osos sewer for the same cost. Cacho ought to appreciate that. It's unbelievable that you just stay stuck, and the evidence is overwhelming. The savings are there. The pollution doesn't have to be there. Be brave. Don't just protect your egos. Thank you and Happy New Year.
Ms. Lucy from Oceano, please. This is my last request, and I'm going to close public comment.
Hello, my name is Mary Lucy. I'm a resident of Oceano. And just as a disclosure, I have to disclose I'm also a director for the OCSD, but I'm here today as a resident of Oceano. And I'd like to talk about you know, we have man-made disasters and we have natural disasters. And what happened in the South County this week, from one level to the next, was, in my opinion, man-made. The rains came, the lagoon area filled up. Okay, everybody stood there and watched it, except for the people who live in the area. You know, that was one disaster that happened. No communication. People don't know what an emergency preparedness plan is. That's a federal mandate under FEMA. Katrina did teach us one thing, is to try to at least create these documents so people are coordinated and moving properly. I went to some of the highest levels and nobody knew what an emergency preparedness plan was, and it was quite embarrassing. So I'll wait till you to speak to the issue of the agenda on the emergency proclamation that you have up. What I'm going to end on is you have about 35 homes that have been evacuated into a certain area, and what you're concerned about is the water and the quality of the water. And that's very important, but I'm going to come from a public health point of view, is that, you know, I have over $5,000 worth of water purification in my home. I live on Beach Street. I live one block off the zone 1-1A area. You know, I don't even live hardly into the flood area. I cannot physically afford to have the sanitation district's water into my household. It will kill us. We do not have the health. We have disabled people living in our homes, and that's pretty much the case across the board in Oceano. So don't only look at it from, you know, oh my gosh, we have this much water in someone's house, but what kind of water do we have in that house? We're going to have, I've not seen one public health official from public health down there testing the waters. I've been in almost all the houses. I brought sandbags down there. I've been trapped down there. You know, nobody's passing masks out. Nobody's passing gloves out. So I'm wondering, are we just ignoring this aspect of it, the long-term health effects of it? Because that's not a preventive way of addressing things. So I'm not going to talk too much on your actual flood till a later date. What I do want to talk about is how many conflicts of interest do you have before you realize you have a severe conflict of interest inherently going through your administration. You have one person who is in charge of too many areas. That is an overextended person.
Time is up. Thank you very much. I'm going to close public comment. We're going to move into the discussion item at hand. Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Grant, County Administrator. Today is a special meeting that was called so that we could update you, your board, on the ongoing recovery and response efforts due to the storms and the record amount of rainfall that we had last week. We'll talk about the damages that the flooding has caused and what we're doing to mitigate that. Additionally, we are requesting that your board extend by resolution the proclamation of a local emergency that I declared on December 21st as a result of the storms and those damages. And soon after I declared that, Governor Schwarzenegger also declared and proclaimed San Luis Obispo County a state of emergency as well as he did so for a number of other counties as well. So today what we want to do is really have the team that we've brought together today provide you details of the recovery efforts and the damages that have occurred and what we're doing to mitigate those. And first, we're going to have Ron Alsop from our emergency services area will present an overview of the events. He'll talk about an explanation and explain, actually, what a local emergency declaration is versus a state emergency declaration versus a federal declaration that is pending. We now have a local declaration of emergency and a state declaration of emergency. We do not have a federal declaration at this point. So he'll go through what exactly that means to public agencies and the private residents. From there, he'll talk about a little bit of update on the damage assessments that we have right now and some of the ongoing efforts that that he's moving with. Then we're going to have Public Works. They're going to give an update on the role the Public Works had during the storms and what they're dealing with now in regards to cleanup activities and potential prevention activities. So we'll get to that right after Ron. And then finally, we'll have Penny Bornstein, our health officer, talk about the health issues that occurred and any of the mitigation efforts that they're doing at this point in time. So after that, we'll open it for questions from the board, and hopefully we'll give you the information that you need to then extend that proclamation of local emergency. And then finally, what I'd like to do is really thank all those responders who are actually out in the field, from Public Works and the Sheriff's Office and General Services and Emergency Services and the Red Cross and all the other folks and agencies that were out there really helping folks during the storm. They did a good job. They're up 24/7 working on this emergency, and they did everything that they could to help mitigate any of the damages that occurred. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ron.
Thank you. It just seems like coincidentally 7 years ago about this time we were going through the same exercise in an earthquake situation. Ron, go ahead.
No, we were. Ron Alsop, Office of Emergency Services, and tomorrow happens to be my birthday, and the last emergency board meeting I was at was on my birthday for the San Simeon earthquake 7 years ago. So I hope it's not a pattern in another 7 years. And with that, again, Ron Alsop, Office of Emergency Services. And as far as starting this event, as most of us probably recall, the weekend weather wasn't expected to be too drastic. We were expected to have some rather drastic weather midweek. However, on December 18th, 19th, that weekend wasn't expected to be too bad. Mother Nature had other plans. On the morning of Sunday, December 19th, the waters started to rise, in particularly in the Oceano area, as we know. The Five Cities Fire Authority began going house to house to check on people and actually start to helping some folks with some special needs that couldn't evacuate comfortably on their own to actually move them out of their homes. It's about that time in the morning, Public Works also activated their Roy Grande Creek Levee Failure Emergency Response Plan. That's a plan that was developed, if I remember right, about 2 years ago in the overall development revision of our San Luis Obispo County Dam Failure Evacuation Plan at the suggestion of our Public Works Department, actually Pablo's suggestion. We revised that plan to the San Luis Obispo County Dam and Levee Failure Evacuation Plan. So, of course, in our context of it with Office of Emergency Services is what we would do for public response to get the word out to the public and related activities. In conjunction with that, Public Works developed what was then their brand-new Arroyo Grande Creek Levee Failure Emergency Response Plan, and which matches and is affiliated and basically a part of the county's overall dam and levee failure evacuation plan. And we also exercised that plan 2 years ago. They implemented that plan. I know Public Works is going to talk a bit more about the Arroyo Grande levee issue and what happened on December 19th, so I'll let them go into that aspect of it. As conditions continued to worsen, the Oceano CSD was good enough to allow folks to initially evacuate, to have some place to go, to actually evacuate to their office until the American Red Cross opened an evacuation shelter at the Roy Grande High School. At that time, the folks that had gone to the CSD office moved over to the high school, and in fact, Five Cities Fire Authority, which includes the Oceano CSD fire, actually helped transport some people from the CSD over to the shelter. Red Cross ended up serving 25 families out of that shelter, including having five families stay in and use the shelter. And in conjunction, they also sheltered at a hotel two families who had some special needs, and they provided overnight assistance to them for 6 nights. As part of the process to give people a heads up and warn them about a potential levee failure, the Sheriff's Department went through the area and notified people that there was a potential failure. At the same time, they were loading messages into what is now our new reverse 911 system, should they have to make notification in an area by phone for folks to evacuate. We also, of course, in with emergency services, had emergency alert system messages ready to go. Overall, countywide, most of these, as we're well aware, most of the damages were in the South County, and we are seeing some rather significant damages. As we know, a lot of homes in the Oceano area, particularly that one area near the airport, but there are also scattered damages elsewhere, Napomo, Old Town Napomo area, and a few businesses were rather hard hit. We have some folks that literally are out of a job right now. At the Avila Hot Springs, the water actually ran through the facility, a lot of their rooms, their work areas. And they literally, of course, had to tear out the carpeting. Their dryers were ruined in their facility. Their restaurants closed, had about 2 feet of water in the restaurant. Next door at the KOA campground, they were booked full for Christmas Day and into the weekend. They had 85 bookings. They had to cancel all of those. They lost all that business. Down the street at Sycamore Mineral Springs, they had so much flooding that some employees were literally trapped there for 11 and a half hours. They couldn't get out. So we have some pretty significant damage, not only with some homes, and of course we saw the sewer problems that were previously discussed and will be touched on here later in another presentation. Although that wasn't just us. Many of you may have seen yesterday in the LA Times did a rather significant article on beaches closed all up and down the Southland because of sewage spills due to the large storms. We did have a large storm. I understand Public Works is actually going to go into a little bit of detail about how much rain that we actually did have. As far as emergency proclamation, that does give us some authorities that we generally don't have on a day-to-day basis to actually go out and do something and cut through the red tape, if you will, to simplify the terminology of what we're trying to do here. You know, kind of cut through the purchasing process. If we need something, we go out and do it within reason, of course. And that within reason, of course, part of actually asked our county auditor controller one time, Jerry Seabach, that this authority gives that the emergency proclamation gives us authority to go out and do things, but after the fact, he has to approve it. I said, what if we spend some money on something you don't approve later? And he said, well, then you better make some wise decisions. So it doesn't give us carte blanche to just go out and do whatever, but it does give us authority to go out and do what we need to reasonably do. So we did proclaim the local emergency, and we are here, as Jim mentioned, asking you to extend that, which will be an extension for, basically by default, an extension for 14 days, since you need to review it for every 14 days. We'll probably close it out at that time. As Jim mentioned, we also did get the state of emergency proclamation, which caught me off guard. We got it about 2 hours after we requested it. Jim proclaimed the local emergency. We actually faxed it down to the California Emergency Management Agency about 5 minutes to five. On that afternoon, and a little bit before 7 o'clock, we get the notification that the Governor Schwarzenegger had proclaimed our county as one of the six counties state of emergency area for the storm damage. What happens next is we really need federal disaster assistance in order to get assistance for the victims. We were called yesterday by CalEMA, the California Emergency Management Agency, and asked us if we're ready for a PDA, a preliminary damage assessment, which is what happens when right before we can get a federal disaster declaration, they want to see our damage. Basically, they bring a team in and do this preliminary damage assessment, this PDA, to see if we have enough damage to even warrant requesting the president to proclaim us a federal disaster area. So simply by them asking that, the inference is that, hey, heads up, get ready. You're going to have some federal teams coming in there looking at your damage. So we're going to be gathering some more damage information in the coming days. But if we don't get a federal disaster declaration, unfortunately, there's not much assistance, if any, available for our citizens. Ironically, we public agencies with the state of emergency declaration are eligible for up to 75% of our response costs, some of the costs that Public Works are going to go into related to some of the road system failures and related tasks. With that, I'll close out my portion here with an overview of our damage, what I've been telling the media folks, and it's really a guesstimate. It's taken from the damages actually in the Oceano area, extrapolated out a little bit. Actually looking at the damages, I made the rounds on Christmas Eve to look at a lot of these sites. So what we've come up with, and this is what we've reported to CalEMA, is we have 15 homes with major damage, about 110 with minor damage, and we're estimating those damage costs at about $750,000. Two businesses with major damage, actually about 25 with minor, for about $185,000 or so. Basically, just under a million, or $935,000 estimated damages to private property, including businesses. As for government defects, a lot of it is related to debris removal, about $100,000, and we're going to see in the presentation for Public Works, there are going to be some significant road costs to mitigate a couple of things and get us back to where we were before the storms, and that's estimated to be about $1.1 million. So overall damages we're estimating are just over $2 million worth of damages to both private property and public costs for response and recovery. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions either now or later. But the next step, we have Public Works with their presentation.
I do have a couple of questions, Ron. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron, if we were to get federal disaster assistance, and that would help the private residents and businesses, if we are not able to do that, how might we be helpful with private property owners and businesses and helping them to receive assistance, I guess, probably through their private insurance? I mean, is there anything that we do, obviously, in time of you know, great stress and other things for a lot of these folks? They may need help just to know who they need to call next to file claims. Do we offer any kind of help along that lines?
No, we don't. And not for, unfortunately, we don't have such a setup to provide that type of assistance. The type of assistance we can provide are health guidelines, recovery, and we can direct people in the right direction as far as nonprofit organizations to assist. But unfortunately, we don't have any means to generally provide disaster recovery assistance to folks without any federal declaration.
But I'm assuming that the Red Cross or another one of our organizations does provide that assistance, and I don't know if Mr. Grant's going to jump in here. It
looks I just wanted to have Ron mention the fact that many of those folks, at least what you think initially, had flood insurance in those areas that were flooded down in Oceano. You might want to address that, and the fact that we did provide the dumpsters for helping to clean the houses out that were damaged.
We did provide those dumpsters in the Oceano area that were really significantly hit, that literally had to strip out their houses in a lot of cases to empty those into it. We are finding that most of the properties do have insurance, however, some don't. A woman called me yesterday that carpet's gone, drywall needs to come out, furnitures are in the roll-off dumpsters that the county has provided in the neighborhood, and they have no insurance. Insurance or flood insurance was, she told, said, was a daughter calling on behalf of her mother. It said the flood insurance, and this is what she stated, was about $2,000 a year, so she couldn't afford it. Unfortunately, in that case, we don't have any recourse to help that type of situation. As you mentioned, for immediate needs, American Red Cross, as they did, provides a short-term assistance. But unfortunately, the best we can do is give them some support initially, as Jim mentioned, with the roll-offs we put out there to at least get things out of the way so there's not an upcoming health issue. Also did provide, County Environmental Health provided some guidance to folks on cleaning up and being safe, and that information has been faxed out to residents. It's on the county website, and also yesterday, Five Cities Fire Authority went out there door-to-door to pass out that information to help people mitigate the health effects of that. And we also have, doesn't go directly to your question, but part of the issue is when folks were calling in after the storm damages is trying to figure out where to go for what information. On the County Office of Emergency Services website, we've we actually have consolidated information on which county department does what. You can get everything you need on there, and we'll add more stuff as it comes up to it, or as we get to it. But that includes the environmental health, the guidance, information, the planning department, who needs a permit in context of rebuilding, and down to what are the current road conditions, and a whole bunch of other links on there.
Can you give that address, please, real quickly, Ron?
Yes, the internet address for that is slowcountyoes.com. So slowcountyoes, all one word. slowcountyoes.com. And also we're finding that, of course, in some cases people don't have access to the internet, and they can certainly call us up on the phone at 781, of course, 805 here locally, 781-5011. Again, 781-5011 for the County Office of Emergency Services. And we'd be happy to help the folks. And that's another thing that we didn't want to get into is calling a county department and saying, no, another county department does that. You know, if we call us, I'm not our tendency is not to have them say, well, that's an environmental health question, you need to call them. Our tendency is to call environmental health to make sure they can have somebody get a hold of this person and take care of their needs.
Thank you. Thank you. Sure. Ron, I know the difference between the state declaration and a federal declaration, but if, let's say, for example, we do not get any federal assistance on this, do we have any possibilities for the long-term fix of some of the problems that have created this flooding issue? I know we're already going to look at the clearing of the Arroyo Grande Creek area, But does this put us in a better position to be able to access grants or anything else that can help mitigate these problems?
Well, ironically, it does in the long term. The hazard mitigation grants are very competitive. The federal hazard mitigation grants, for example, the Cambria project, flood control project that was just completed, resulted from the 1995 floods, and that opened us up to a little more of an advantage in the federal hazard mitigation grant program because we did have damages. So if we can show a repetitive loss, the ironic thing is that the more loss you have, the greater odds you have of getting such a grant. In that context, yes. If we do get a federal declaration, one of the things that happens is that also opens up a hazard mitigation plan directly related to that disaster. So it basically doubles our chances of getting assistance. But even without that declaration, the more repetitive losses you have, ironically, the better off you are to get these grants.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume Public Works was going to give us a little description of the issues with the flood control infrastructure in the South County and how that affected the particular events that occurred in Oceano and just what, if any, connection there is. So I'll wait on that. The other thing, I just wanted to be sure I understood the import of the local proclamation of disaster. It seems it has two forks in it. One of it is to allow the county to be more responsive. And you'd indicated that, if not carte blanche, you got a Visa card with a low limit on it to go ahead and do things. I'd be interested, before the presentation's over, to know exactly what we're looking at going forward on that, what plans you have. It sounds like you've been responsive. But the other question is, it seems to me that the federal disaster declaration is the important step here, and I'm wondering, do we have a channel or provision for making direct contact with federal FEMA? Are we working this through our Washington, D.C. contacts, through CalFEMA? Do we have a way of directly getting in touch with the federal FEMA to make sure they understand the severity of the issues we're facing here?
To answer your first question, I don't know that the county's actually expended any funds that we wouldn't have already. One of the reasons we want to keep the proclamation open is in particular with Public Works, there's a potential slide issue that's relatively serious that they actually already started working on this week, is some money, sources unknown. And then also, as Jim mentioned, the roll-offs, that's generally not a service the county would provide, but under proclamation of local emergency, we can tie that to public health and safety. So it's things like that. It's still, we have the credit card in our back pocket, but it's kind of a just-in-case-we-need-it type of thing. So that, I can say right now that there's zero cost that we would not have incurred had we not had the proclamation.
Okay.
As far as the federal efforts to make the contact with FEMA, yes, Greg Haas has been in contact with us from Congresswoman Capp's office, many that you all know and many of the audience knows. And then also Senator Boxer's office has been in contact with us. So we do have those avenues as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess we'll go to Public Works now. Mr. Honeycutt or Mr. Benedict?
Good morning. My name is Frank Honeycutt with County Public Works. I'm your Transportation Division Manager. This here is some of the rainfalls from our alert gauges across the county. You can see the farther south and farther west you go in the county, there's more rainfall. This doesn't quite tell the total picture. The first storm system that came through was centered on the South County. It was a bit more intense than the later one that came, that also went a little further north into Los Osos and San Luis Obispo. But generally, you could see what we got going there. We opened our storm center on Saturday the 18th. As you can see, we're open for about 35 hours. We fielded about 150 calls from the public. We were able to mobilize all our crew because of the intensity and because of the forecast. We actually got to a spot where we split out our field crews, had some go home early, told them to go to sleep so they could work into the night and work on shifts so that we wouldn't have anybody too exhausted and operating in an unsafe manner. We also had another 24 people in the office provide assistance. We probably could have provided more if we had needed. One of the things that we noticed that The majority of the issues were in the South County, so our road crews in the North County were able to come out and provide assistance. Had this been a larger event, we might have had to call on perhaps CAL FIRE or local fire departments for assistance. As I think it's already been mentioned, we've had lots of assistance from Sheriff and CHP. Down in the Port of San Luis and PG&E were very cooperative, and they actually provided some assistance there as well. This is a list of the roads here that we had to close at one time or another. Some of the roads were closed due to being adjacent to a river, and the river swelled, and we were able to open the roads up against once the water levels dropped. Some of these roads had mudslides on them or threatening to them, and we had to close there. You'll see two of the roads there in red. Those roads are still closed. All of the other roads have been opened or been minimally opened. This is a long list of specific storm events. You'll see them focused mostly by road name or bridge name. Look a lot like the previous list. There we go. This is the same list. You'll see two items here are red. Everything that's white on the list, we've been able to stabilize. We can. There may be more work that we have to do on there in the coming months, but we're good for the next rain on everything except for these two red items. Avila Beach Drive, well, and Riverside Road. I'll have some pictures here in a second. This is kind of a typical situation we've had to deal with all over the county. I'm afraid the picture's a little dark there. We'll have, along the side of the road, drainage will cause issues to come up. This one here, we had some back cutting that threatened the road, and also would have been a surprise if somebody tried to pull off the road there at that point. We were able to have crews come out and respond to that. We covered it with plastic and sandbags. It's not quite as obvious. We put up some sandbags across this, the other side of the road to keep the drainage going where it historically went. In the coming weeks, we'll have to find out why this happened this time for the first time ever. But we'll be doing that typically. I guess I can go through some of these a little more quickly. Oceano Lagoon, there's already been a lot of people talking about this. We just had general flooding over a larger area. Again, Avila Beach Drive at the Sycamore Mineral Springs. This part of the road we had to close. We actually closed and opened it more than once to accommodate the rainfall and the level in the creek. Some of our response is to focus on roads that are in high demand and where there are no other detours. For instance, here, if you needed to go through this area, you would have been diverted to San Luis Bay Drive, which remained open the whole time. If your destination was Sycamore Mineral Springs or the Avila Springs, then you wouldn't have been able to get there, but everywhere else you would have been. This is on Riverside down on the south side of the Mesa on the Bluffs. I think this has been on the news more than once. We're still investigating the causes for this. And we'll find out more. But Riverside Road is closed, remains closed. There is quite a tens of thousands of yards of dirt have eroded and moved onto this spot. And our crews were able to put up some of the K-rail. It doesn't show it in this phone in attempt to divert mud away from a large home. I think we were successful in that. But we have a lot more work yet to do on this one. Also on Avila Beach Drive, between the piers, we had more than one significant slide there. Our crews worked in the night and the day to keep this open. As you know, this is the primary access to Diablo Canyon. PG&E actually contacted us and asked how they could help. So we were able to stage equipment there to keep this one open. One thing that we need to do here is we're, right now as we speak, we're setting up K-rail. We've shifted traffic over to one side. We're setting up K-rail there to contain any other mud that comes down. We had a geologist out there. We were able to get some assistance from Caltrans. using their geologist who's familiar with keeping Route 1 open through Big Sur, he noticed a couple areas that we expect dirt to come down this season, and so we've set up K-rail to try to contain that. Part of containing it will allow us to clean it up on our schedule rather than in the middle of the night and in the dark. And also, of course, that'll be safer, and we don't want to run the risk of stranding Diablo Canyon. Hutton Road, it's a little hard to tell from these pictures. That's a sound wall that's up on top of the bank. These are two different areas where water came off of the farm fields and eroded onto Hutton Road, put a lot of mud and water onto the street. We were able to close that. This, as you can tell, has been cleaned up. Visqueen has been placed to minimize future damage, but the road has been open. And now, turn it over to Dean.
Yes, good morning. Dean Benedicts, Utilities Division Manager of Public Works. I'll talk just very briefly about the Rio Grande Creek and our emergency response plan that we had in place. As your board is aware, the district has flood control levees along the Rio Grande Creek in the Cienega Valley area that on December 1st, 2009, were declared as having reached their useful life, effectively designating them as obsolete. This declaration was made by agreement between state and federal agencies, as well as by your board. On November 2nd, 2010, your board adopted the Rio Grande Creek Waterway Management Plan and certified its EIR for the plan's implementation. The Waterway Management Plan provides an implementation program for a combination of vegetation and sediment removal and levee modifications to increase the current Rio Grande Creek channel capacity in the area of the Cienega Valley. Due to the fact that we currently have severely restricted capacity into the foreseeable future in the channel, during anticipated high precipitation rainfall events, Public Works operates at what Ron described as the Rio Grande Creek Levee Failure Emergency Response Plan. How do I go with that for Frank? Which one did I hit? Okay. Additionally, based on rainfall predictions, we install visqueen sheeting on segments of the south levee at three locations, shown here as levee protection areas, where our models have estimated that there's the highest potential for overtopping of the levee due to high water. This protective measure is intended to decrease the potential for levee erosion and breaching or complete failure. On the afternoon of Wednesday, December 15th, the National Weather Service predicted upwards of 12 inches of rainfall over the period of Saturday, December 18th, to Wednesday, December 22nd. Based on these predictions, Public Works took several actions. We did begin installation of visqueen on these three locations, and we also activated the Rio Grande Creek Levee Failure Emergency Response Plan. Our activation basically encompassed a 24-hour-a-day watch, which occurred from Saturday afternoon through Wednesday morning, and this included the Utilities Division and Roads Assistance of staff monitoring out in the field the conditions of the levee and the water levels, as well as the projected and actual rainfall and water levels that we have on the website. It's not going to work. I cannot get that to move. Okay, thank you. The peak flow in the Rio Grande Creek channel occurred approximately 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, and the vertical dark line you see is the peak elevation of the water in the Rio Grande Creek channel, which is at elevation of just over 27. Now, according to our graphs and our models, if we had reached 28, which is about 8-tenths of a foot higher water level, we would have water overtopping at the Rio Grande Creek. The locations that I wanted to illustrate to you are termed, I guess I could call them, as the wrap property. This is the easternmost location where we have levee protection and where we thought that the lowest levee height with the highest water would cause our initial problem. We found that this was approximately 1 to 2 feet below when we reached, the water level was 1 to 2 feet below the top of the levee at this spot when we had our peak water flow. The second elevation or location is adjacent to the Taylor property. This is just upstream of 22nd Street Bridge. And this was we found that this was a little bit lower, basically 1 foot to 1.5 foot between the top of the levee and the levee and the water surface elevation. This is the location that I just showed you. The water level is about 1 to 2 feet below as best we could project. This was taken on Sunday afternoon, and it's not a very exciting picture, and that's really good because if the water got higher, we'd have potential for overtopping in that location. The third location, which we didn't anticipate was a problem, but we determined was the most critical location, was just west of 22nd Street at what we call Bijou Seeds. And at this location, the water level got about 0.8 feet below the top of the levee. And again, this is not a very impressive picture. It was difficult to take pictures, but we were about 0.8 feet from that water level to the top of that levee. The district also maintains drainage structures, including the Meadow Creek flap gates, which are shown here. The flap gates prevent high Aurora Grande Creek channel flows from flooding the Meadow Creek area. The Meadow Creek area, as I'm describing, includes Security Court, Maui Circle, other local locations, as well as the South County Sanitation District and the Oceano Airport. Based on observed sediment over this past summer, Public Works staff applied for a sediment removal permit this fall to remove sediment from the Aurora Grande Creek side of the flap gates, which is to your right here in the foreground, outside of those flap gates, which are now operating. You can see water coming out of them. In anticipation of the storm, when we found out on Wednesday that we were going to get upwards of 12 inches of rain, we applied for an emergency permit and requested environmental agencies to give us that permit so we could fully remove all sediment from in front of those flap gate locations, so they could freely and clearly operate. That cleanup was done on Friday afternoon on the 17th of December. We had a backhoe out there, a large piece of excavator that pulled all the mud and all the silt out from in front of those gates. And they were completely cleared and free-flowing on Friday afternoon, about noontime. The outfall from Aurora Grande Creek Channel ponds and exits into the ocean depending on three critical items. One is the sandbar elevation at the ocean. The second is Aurora Grande Creek water elevation. And third is the tide level. Now, these three elements combine at various capabilities to determine actually, or to allow that water that's coming down the creek to flow into the ocean. These two slides show the outfall condition after the high water level, which occurred on Sunday afternoon, and how extensive that water has eroded out the banks and has lengthened I'll call that the estuary, but has exited into the ocean. I believe Mr. Ogan probably has some following comments to make in regards to this. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, Pavel Ogan, Public Works Department. Just want to make a few comments, mostly of those who helped us, of course, and other responders. One of the simple questions sometimes in an emergency is just who's going to talk to the press. And working with OE staff, with Kelly and Robert early in the event, who responded very quickly and were very helpful, thank you. Just a little question like that becomes very important. And OES's role in handling all the press during an emergency event is extremely important to us, because all of our people are out in the field, not just responding to the emergency, but in many cases actually risking their own well-being and potentially life. It has been about 20 years ago that I attended a funeral of one of our staff members who died just after an event, not during the actual rainfall, but the winds that were subsequently happening, and they were doing some trees. So, you know, our people who are out in the field doing these events are very much risking their own well-being and trying to be respondent. And so when OES handles coordination between the different responders, whether it's, you know, the sheriff or the fire or public works, the health agency and the press, you know, your OES staff here is, I mean, we all know how good the OES staff is. We're, in a way, decades of the value of, because of Diablo Canyon, because of the funding that's been provided on emergency response, we have a great team here. And again, I want to make sure to emphasize their importance and their helpfulness in it. And in these kind of situations, what I did on the morning, knowing that the levees themselves were our highest risk facility, and knowing that it's a very quickly changing environment in the levees with the vegetation growth and other things that you know, are reducing the capacity of the levees, we have computer models set up. We have the electronic gauge information that's coming in. But the need to get out there and making sure that that information makes sense in context of what we're seeing in creek flows and everything else was one of the things that I specifically did, because we had a number of people who are monitoring the levees, looking for different signs of potential failure, looking at water levels. Certainly, South County Fire and the sheriffs were the primary respondents in the lagoon area, and I'll speak to that again in a closing comment that I have here. But the need to get out there, make sure that everybody's fulfilling their roles and responsibilities is basically what I did as the events are unfolding. And then getting up and talking with Dean as he's monitoring electronic information, watching the creek level rises, and then he points me to areas to go and observe to see whether or not, again, the physical conditions are reflective of what we're seeing in the computers and the modeling. The good news is that at least in terms of the evaluations and the engineering, they did seem to be pretty consistent. Dean had mentioned that we saw some flows in the levees a little bit higher than what we expected, especially one of those last photos that showed a lot of grass on top of the levee. That was actually the place that it failed about 10 years ago. So out there, and in those events, as you're seeing the water's levels rising and you see horses in the fields, and some of the ranchers are already taking animals out, but other ones aren't, stress levels are rising. I'm on the phone with OES and on the phone with other people. And right about that time, late in the afternoon, it's starting to get sun. Dean had the graph that shows the creek level. I don't know if you can pop that graph back up that showed as the creek levels were rising. And Dean had mentioned that the peak flows there were late in the afternoon, and that curve is steep and it's going up, and it's still raining outside. And I'm on the levee with Ron Coleman, and we're watching, you know, the water level about 8 to 10 inches from the top. We're not quite at the point where we're ready to declare an imminent failure, where, you know, we're saying it is going to break, but it's getting pretty close. The judgment call is difficult. I get off the levee, I go back to 22nd Street Bridge, which is where is our central point of contact on the levees, where everybody comes back around. And at that point where my stress level is highest, there's 5 sheriff deputy cars there. And it's one of those things where it's like, how do they know it? But they know it. And part of it is, you know, we do our work independently. Other responders gain their understanding. When we went through our dam, the emergency response plan a couple years ago with them, they told us, look, you guys are doing fine. We'll be there when we need to be there. And I'm telling you, when I got back at that 22nd Street Bridge, they were there. Commander Conway himself was excellent. You know, I just said we're not ready to call an imminent failure. We know that as you rise in level, your capacity continues to increase because the actual levee system gets wider. So elevations is one indicator of the state of the situation, but the actual capacity is a little bit different. Point being, though, is Commander Conway said, I understand, we'll take care of it. And they immediately got out there and started talking to all the property owners and everything. And the agricultural side, the south side of the levee, everybody was just incredible, both in terms of traffic and moving horses and moving people and getting prepared for the emergency. Again, I thought that the overall response of the different responding agencies was very, very good. Obviously, we continue to be very concerned about the levees. We're maintaining the northern levees at a slightly higher elevation so that if the day or when the day comes that they do overtop, that it is southerly and focused in, again, on the open areas and the ag fields. The agricultural interests in the area have for the last several years recognized that if the levees are going to overtop, then they need to do so southerly into the ag fields. That's never guaranteed, though. You know, just one tree planting itself in the side of the levee and creating an eddy and eroding it could all create a different kind of a disaster. So some of the areas of improvement during the event, OES did a nice job. The county has recently acquired the reverse 911 system. They started implementing it on the fly during the event, and obviously since it's just been recently acquired, it hasn't been fully incorporated into an emergency response plan, but certainly that's something that we're going to be doing in the near future. Other preparedness actions as well. The relationship then, I think, my final comment on the relationship of the lagoon area itself to the levee systems and the flap gates that Dean was showing. They got out there, they made sure that they were operational prior to the event. Ron Coleman and his crew on the operating side, they worked those flap gates to make sure that they were opening and closing, and then they leave them in a rested position to allow the tides and the natural water flows to operate. Certainly we had a high tide that was contributing to it. As we saw that creek level raise in the, very significantly in the late afternoon, then all of a sudden it quickly started to drop, even before the rain stopped. And what we believe then is, of course, that the significant breaching of the sandbar had happened, and that did coincide with low tides. We were, in addition to watching rainfall and creek levels, we're also very cognizant of the tides. The creek had started to flow into the ocean the day before, just minimally. So certainly that tidal influence, or the reduction in the low tide that then creates the different water levels behind the sandbar, that opening up then freed the creek to flow a little bit much better. That is one thing that historically we were able to do that we're not able to do right now, is to actually get heavy equipment out on the beach and break those bars. I spoke with Monterey County officials. They did in their situation where Salinas River then empties into the ocean, were able to last week get some heavy equipment out there and breach their sandbar through emergency permits, although they ended up having to take some risks. They did not get an emergency permit from Coastal before going out there. They had it from some of the other federal and state agencies, and they're also operating under a permit. We're still in our Arroyo Grande HCP, and although your board adopted a waterway management plan, we still have to go through permitting activities on that. So we did get some emergency permits in order to make sure the flap gates were operational and stuff. But again, some future efforts are, what are the timing? Can we get heavy equipment back out in the breach on the beach in order to help breach it and not have to wait for that low tide? And that may be a situation that in the future might help to reduce the flooding or the water levels in the lagoon area. So overall, again, I was really appreciative of all the responders out there, our crews and everything. It is sad there is a number of people who are affected. And again, lessons continue to be learned through these events and move forward.
Okay, I think I have a number of questions here. I have staff light on. Did you want to?
Yes, I was just going to add one thing. It might be good for the public to know that, including in that reverse 911 system, Ron has set up the ability to have the siren go off in that area if there were the event of an evacuation.
Thank you. I'm going to go to the board. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ogren, we saw slides of flooding on Avila Beach Drive at Sycamore Hot Springs and Avila Hot Springs, as well as slides on Avila Beach Drive between the piers. And I'm wondering if at any time was there access for evacuation from Avila Canyon, should there be an emergency there? Was that ever impaired to the point where people couldn't evacuate from that area?
I think Ron can answer.
Yeah.
Ron Alsop, Office of Emergency Services, and no, there was not. We never had what's referred to as a stranded plant that never occurred. The roadways remained open in the plant itself, and as mentioned earlier during the presentation, San Luis Bay Drive, Avila Road remained open.
Okay, and what was the water source from that flooding that was quite extensive there at Sycamore Springs? Was that San Luis Creek that just...
That's correct. That is San Luis Creek.
Okay. Are there releases from Lopez Lake during those high flows, or is that completely dammed off into Arroyo Grande Creek?
Yeah, as soon as we trigger into the emergency response plan, and again, Dean, you might pop up that graph, because under the emergency response plan itself, it's triggered when the creek level gets up to that pink horizontal. It says stage feet, 24 feet. Once we get there, then we turn off the releases from Lopez Dam. So now, you know, what we end up seeing is really just the natural flows into either Rio Grande Creek or Los Barros Creek. Both watersheds come down. It would seem in this event that we never saw really significant flows through the Los Barros Creek channel. If we had gotten hit harder there, then that may have been a problem. When the levees did breach about 10 years ago, it was a function of both a tree hitting the side of the levee, creating the eddy action, but we had a lot more flows out of Los Barros Creek too. So, but in any case, the dam gets shut down. There's the two different watersheds that we have to monitor.
Okay, and I know there's concern about the levee breaching on the north side. Was the South County Sanitation District's treatment plant ever at risk at being flooded?
I see that Mr. Wallace, who's the manager for South County Sand District, is in here. I know that they did have some impacts from the levees itself, not on this event. And I do know that in the last several years, 5-10 years, they've taken a number of additional protective actions to protect the plant in case of a levee failure. But in this particular event, part of the emergency response plan is to contact them. But they independently then start doing their own response measures.
Okay. And what are the long-term plans for addressing the Arroyo Grande Creek levee issues in that corridor? Because, you know, a few years ago, that's where it did breach. I know you're doing vegetation clearing and so forth, but are there plans and is there funding in place to actually make improvements so every time we get a storm event like this, we're not at risk of flooding there?
Well, in terms of the waterway management plan that your board recently approved, next steps associated with that are to get permits and try to find funding for it. There is not identified funding to be able to implement that plan right now. So, you know, we do have grant applications that are going in through the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan and another flood grant program that exists. Even those grants aren't going to be sufficient to do some of the long-term projects in terms of increasing the levee heights. So the best-case scenarios under that water management plan are still developing capacity for something like a 20-year storm, far short of, you know, a 100-year storm, which would be a much better situation. What we want to come back to your board with after, again, we need to be working on the shorter-term issues, the vegetation, the sediment removal, continuing to work with raising the levees to the extent that we can underneath that water management plan. But we really do need now to come back and start doing some more of the longer-term evaluations of permanent solutions. Again, we've talked about one of the big issues there is increasing the height of the railroad bridge, and so there's extensive costs associated with doing that. Work in progress, but certainly we will want to be scheduling time later this spring and summer to talk about some of those long-term issues as well.
And just one final comment. I think it's appropriate at this time to thank Public Works. It wasn't too many years ago that pictures very similar to what we saw this morning was also occurring in Santa Margarita. And Public Works and the community have taken a number of steps there to do vegetation clearing in Yerba Buena Creek, as well as some low-impact development floodway improvements up there, and we had no flooding in Santa Margarita during the storms there, and we did get some heavy rainfalls in the watershed above Santa Margarita, and it was all that water was conveyed through the community without flooding. And my hat's off to the community and Public Works for working over the past 3 years to make those improvements in that community and prevent flooding there, which was typical during events like this in the past.
Well, and along that line, too, thank you for reminding me, our San Luis Coastal RCD, Jill and Nola are our primary staff members, are working on Rio Grande Creek levee, as they have been doing on your flood control programs up in Santa Margarita. And working closely with the San Luis Coastal RCD, we have been able to, in the levees themselves, sometimes little things help a lot, getting underneath the trees and the tree covers and trimming them up essentially the limbs up to about where the top of the levees were. And we had some really good videos where you see the water flowing around the trees and avoiding all the vegetation because it's actually growing up above the water line. Things like that can be the difference in events like this. So hats off to all of them.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Honeycutt, I wonder if we could... I want to go back a little bit to Avila Beach Drive, and we saw the photo of some erosion occurring. I don't think your deadpan professionalism hasn't exactly yet soothed my neurotic worrier about what we're doing to ensure both long-term and short-term about mudslides and rockfalls in this area so that our residents and the plant itself aren't stranded or worse. I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit more on how we're going to stabilize short-term and long-term. We have rain coming, very narrow, difficult road. We have a fair amount of residents, elderly residents included, and don't want to see them afraid to be in their homes.
You know, as I was sitting here thinking, I realized I forgot to mention some key points on this slide here. We have what we're calling immediate response and then a short-term response. Immediate response is to set up a K-rail with fence on top that should contain the mud. If it doesn't contain the mud, then we're back to what we already have, getting our crews out there at a moment's notice, getting PG&E or port crews out there at a moment's notice. However, there's no guarantee, but it's highly likely the K-rail that we're setting up will contain most or all of a slide. That would be for our immediate response. And it should be ready by the end of the day in case we get a lot of rain tomorrow. For a short-term response, we're going to be working on trying to get an emergency coastal permit to get the soil that's up there that looks like it could come down at any time. We're going to use our emergency procurement procedures to get a contractor out there perhaps in the next month or two. I don't know if you're familiar with the type of equipment. The guys in the field call it a crawler. Looks like a backhoe, but it doesn't have wheels. It's got feet on it. And they get some very crazy operators who would love to climb up the side of that hill with their equipment and start removing that dirt. So there's a lot of work to do before we can get permission to do that or the permits. But that's what we're attempting to do. We've had geologists out there last week. I met with other geologists yesterday, and we're getting together a proposal to figure out how to, you know, precisely address that.
So you feel confident that our immediate response plans are adequate with rains coming in this on Avila Beach Drive in terms of keeping mud and other rock material?
Yeah, I won't make any guarantees, because who knows, but... we're doing all that anybody could do, and it's highly likely that we'll be able to clean up a mess on our own schedule instead of Mother Nature's schedule. I would point out that while we're out there, there are a lot of goers by on bike or foot, beachgoers. We're all very concerned because while we have this K-rail up, we're eliminating a lot of parking and inconvenience for somebody. So there will be some inconvenience, mm-hmm. but... everybody who needs to get to the port or to Diablo Canyon will be able to do that.
Mr. Alsop, would you want to
Yes, thank you. Just want to make a clarification. We have no residents beyond that point. So, of course, we would have Port San Luis and stranded folks there. But we've actually, in the past, timed how long it would take to run boats from the pier over to the Pismo Pier. So that wouldn't be a particular issue. And this would be a prime example of why it's good to have in place a local proclamation. If our good public works folks do get busy, something happens out there, this would be one of the things where we call a private contractor out there and do whatever we need to do to get the road back open if it did have a problem. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did your geotechnical experts give you a specific quantitative volume estimates of mud yet to come down? Did they get that detailed about that?
No, they're not able to do that. The only way to get a good quantity on that now would be to do a topographic survey. Obviously, any survey we would have had would no longer be valid.
Okay.
But no.
Okay. And then going back to the emergency permits and the breaching of the Arroyo Grande Creek, when you went for the emergency permit to clear the flap gates, why not go for within that same permit, which I assume involves the same agencies, go for a permit to breach the creek as well?
One is that, you know, the timing of what to do and when to do it, we were not in a position to be able to request the permit. We know that we've done it historically, but when we need to do
the permit to breach,
yeah,
we weren't in a position because there wasn't.
Well, you know, where do we want to breach? How do we want to do it? All the procedures associated with doing it, and the fact that we don't have a basic operating permit within the coastal zone already, like Monterey County does for their work efforts. So in taking efforts to want to open up the flap gates and everything, we knew what we needed to do there. We were able to be very specific with the agencies on that request. But again, it's work in progress in order to identify breaching the beach itself. When might we want to do that? When might it be acceptable? We just were not in a position to be able to make that request.
Okay. So I assume the breach remains open now. We've got
yes.
a flow to keep it open.
Yeah, in fact, I've been going down there about every other day. The last pictures that Dean showed of some vertical walls on the beach,
right.
On the creek side of the beach,
right.
Were taken right after the event. I'd say that the overall floodplain, if you will, even though the creek itself is maybe about 20 yards wide, the overall floodplain right now is probably about a quarter of a mile wide. So even a lot of the soil that you see there has eroded.
I guess where I'm headed with this is within this rain season, if that sandbar reestablishes itself, we got to be ready for that.
Yeah,
it seems
would not anticipate we could do anything better than what Mother Nature has already done itself.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean the width of that the breach today is about a quarter of a mile wide.
Are you going to need to go back on the floodgates, and did the flap gates operate properly, and are you going to need to go back on
those? We're going back, and in fact Dean was having somebody go out there and inspect them yesterday. I went out there the day after the event to make sure that, you know, just visual observation that they were open and they were flowing, and you know, visual observation was that they were working well and everything.
And I guess the question is, did they close properly? Where I'm going with this is that we talked a lot about the height of the levees, but it seems like the flooding in Oceano was actually caused by the inability of water to get out through the levees and out into the ocean.
That's right.
Unless you're telling me that something backed up off the levee.
Well, your high tide comes up.
Right.
Your creek flows are high.
Right.
So those flap gates are going to go close.
Right.
The water backs up behind the lagoon.
Okay.
Once your water levels drop on the creek side and the tides go down, flap gates open up again, and the lagoon flows out.
And all that work.
And that all, all the evidence seems to say that that's exactly what happened.
Okay. And do we have a map of the inundation area of Oceano? Do we go to a particular contour? Do we know, just, again, for future planning, do we know what portions of Oceano are at risk here?
We can certainly prepare one. We don't have one today, and
I think that that would be useful in terms of our understanding where we need to go.
Yeah, and, you know, on that point, the first respondents in that lagoon area really was the sheriff and fire.
I mean, do we need to get emergency pumps into that area?
Yeah, I think there's room for improvement, again, on public awareness, public education, preparedness in those events.
I mean, pumps?
That's what, in terms of long-term solutions on the levees, whether it's pumps or whether it's even potentially a modification of the outlets as they are today. You know, those outlets were put in 50 years ago. They've been maintained and modified since then. But is there a design today that would work better than those flap gates that were designed? You know, technologies have changed and everything. So whether it's big pumps or whether or not it's modifications to, you know, taking out the flap gates and doing some other type of design, both of those need to be looked at.
Okay. I mean, again, we're not into even our wettest months yet, nominally, and, you know, it's a concern given where we've been. And I'll just offer that as a comment.
Yeah. And then that's understandable. In talking with John Lindsay, he indicated this was our highest two-day event since about 1995. Right. So it was a significant event, even though it was early in the year. The La Nina prediction for this year so far is holding true, where we're expecting our heaviest rains before January 1st. And then after January 1st, the prediction is that it's going to be drier weather for an overall winter that is below average. So, you know, of course, time will tell. And point being, though, even though we are early in a typical weather season, this was still a significant event, whether it was December, January, February, March.
And then the last question, given we characterize, you know, a lot of these storms as 50-year storms, 100-year storms, and we know the levees are at low numbers. And I was wondering, is there a characterization of this storm as a 5-year storm or a 10-year storm? Or something?
Yeah, actually, just looking at that this morning, and it looks like we were just above a 5-year storm, but just slightly below 10. So we're right at the level we anticipated this capacity of the levee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any other staff presentations at this point?
Okay. Well, we would have one more from Public Health if you wanted to have that presentation now.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Penny Bornstein, County Health Officer and Public Health Administrator. I'm going to just lay the groundwork, so to speak, briefly. And Rich Lichtenfels, who is our environmental health supervisor for storm management, wastewater management, will give you some of the details. I heard a couple of people mention that they hadn't seen environmental health and public health out, so I guess partially want to set the record straight and say that we'll do a better job of being visible. Our staff have been out in the community, particularly in Oceano, since the weekend when the storm started. I myself and our environmental health director, Kurt Batson, were out on the morning of the Wednesday at the Oceano Security Circle, which was the hardest hit in terms of human resident effects. I do want to make apologies for Kurt Batson for not being here. He, in the midst of this, became a grandfather for the first time, and to his credit, he actually delayed his trip to meet the new baby, sent his wife ahead. So he's now in Hawaii, and we're here. But he really took the event seriously. We had staff develop public information materials, and we went door-to-door in the middle of last week in providing this information again to those hard-hit areas. And as I said, I will allow Rich Lichtenfels to give you more of the detail about all the actions that we've taken, and I'm available for questions as well after.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bornstein. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Richard Lichtenfels, County Environmental Health. The environmental health staff has been busy with public health protection response. As Dr. Bornstein mentioned, Oceano was a big part of what we responded to so far. Environmental health has received some 75 telephone calls from concerned citizens during and after the rains regarding public health concerns and flooding issues. Environmental health has posted, has released several press releases, and as Dr. Bornstein mentioned, we went door-to-door in Oceano distributing cleanup brochures and health advisory information. As everyone knows, the storm produced sewage treatment plants and overflows, and that resulted in many of our waterways and beaches being contaminated with sewage. We were busy posting downstream of those sewage spills. All of our beaches are currently posted as with a health advisory. The three Oceano beach locations that we regularly sample are posted as closed, as is Avila Beach, because they are downstream from known sewage spills. They will remain closed. We're doing testing today to see how they're doing, and they will remain closed until they meet state standards. That will be posted on our website. It's currently posted on our website, the current condition, and if there's any change, it'll be posted on the website. That should happen tomorrow, depending on how the samples that we take today come out. In addition, with the sewage spill into Choro Creek from Cuesta College, the sport harvesting of shellfish has been prohibited. That will be in effect indefinitely until the State Health Department has approval and testing shows that the commercial harvesting of shellfish is acceptable in Morro Bay. So, again, sport harvesting, which is amateur collecting of shellfish in Morro Bay, is prohibited at this time. And we did put out a press release to that effect, so our folks hopefully are aware of that, and we'll continue to press that issue. It's my understanding that the wastewater treatment plants and sewers are able to handle inflows currently, but we all know that there's another storm approaching, so certainly we're ready to respond to further flooding issues that are probably going to happen due to the saturation of soil. I did want to comment on one of a public comment with regard to the sewage spills. You know, historically, we haven't charged sewage treatment plant operators for their sewage spills. Rather than fine them, we have decided to let them spend their money on taking care of their operations and hopefully upgrading their infrastructure. The regional board has taken that responsibility to take a look at sewage spills and decide whether there was a fine, whether a fine was appropriate. At this point, I think we all know that historically, sewage treatment plants run behind development in most areas, and that's nationwide. That's the case. So it's a continual effort to try to make sure sewage infrastructure keeps up with development, and it's an age-old problem and something that this community deals with as well. So we can answer any questions you might have.
We do have one. Mr. Hill?
Just a quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lichtenfeld, the Oceano beaches, you said, are currently closed?
Currently closed,
and
right.
So the recreation area, the riding area, is also closed?
Just the beach area where there would be water contact. Otherwise, the beach would be open.
Okay. And do we have good communications with our state parks?
Absolutely. We communicate with them on a daily basis.
Okay. And are the practices that they engage in any way problematic for the beaches that are not part of the recreation area, that are not part of the off-highway vehicle recreation area?
You know, as long as there's not ocean water contact during this period, it should be okay. And we've explained that to the park rangers, and I think they've conveyed that to the public.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, sir. Do we have any others, Mr. Grant, at this point?
No, that's the end of the presentation right now. Thank you.
It was amazing to watch that Arroyo Grande Creek coming into the ocean. We were down with Pablo and Jim Grant and I and Kelly, and it's almost like reminiscent of looking at the calving of the iceberg, and it just continues to erode. And there's so many different agencies with which you have to work to try to get something accomplished, from the Corps of Engineers, Fish and Game, Coastal Commission, and on it goes. It seems to me that there were ways that we could, I guess, expedite the process to be able to address some of these things before we have to go to FEMA, before we have to go seek emergency support. I think it's an onerous process by which we have to do that. Okay, I'm going to go to the public. I have 1, 2, 3 requests at this point to speak. And Mr. Edwards, you're up first, followed by Tracy Vardis, please.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Board members, greetings. My name is Jeff Edwards. I wanted to speak to your board this morning regarding the flooding in Oceano. as Mr. Diodati is preparing the overhead. Mr. Chairman, I believe you framed the question quite well, and that is, what is the long-term solution for flooding in Oceano? And I believe that, and I would respectfully submit to your board, that the presence of the airport is the primary impediment to a viable long-term solution to flooding in Oceano. And on the overhead, you can see it's not well illuminated, but this is the airport. That's a little bit better. Maybe perhaps one more. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Here is the airport. Here is the lagoon system. The flap gate that was discussed is down in this area. And flooding was realized all along Highway 1. Up here is about 13th Street and Highway 1. I would submit, again, to your board, the airport is a dam and prevents water from making its way to the ocean. There is a cause and effect relationship between the airport and flooding in the community of Oceano. And you heard, this wasn't even a 10-year storm. And we're likely to see additional flooding. And I would submit to you that that Arroyo Grande Creek wasn't the problem. We've heard from your staff that it maintained its banks for the most part. So really the problem originated with Meadow Creek, the lagoon system, and the inability of this water to make it to the ocean in a timely and efficient manner. Are we to assume that the flap gates, that the safety of Oceano turns on whether these flap gates function properly? I think not. The airport serves as a dam. It blocks water from Highway 1. It backs water up all the way along Meadow Creek to the State Park property. We heard State Park property was underwater. It's jeopardized the sanitation facility. And this is a significant problem. We know that water and sewage don't mix. It's been stated that 1 million gallons of raw sewage exited that area when the sanitation district processes 3 million gallons a day. So that's not a good situation. In closing, I'd like to again suggest that the long-term solution to flooding in Oceano relates to the airport. And to consider other options for the airport, I think, are extremely important in this whole debate. And I'd encourage the board to initiate a discussion with the community of Oceano and get the residents' take on the whole situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Tracy Vardis, please, followed by Mary Lucy.
Yes, my name is Tracy Vardis. I work for Diablo Canyon Power Plant, PG&E, and I just wanted to come today and thank the Office of Emergency Services and the Public Works Department for the superb job of coordinating with our utility in keeping Avila Bay Drive open, that area between the piers. It was fabulous coordination that I had with them, and the proactive steps they're taking to implement the K-rail there today, and looking forward to bringing down any other material that needs to come down, and we look forward to partnering with you. I also appreciate the ability of them allowing us at PG&E to assist with the clearing of Avila Beach Drive, and I will, after storms, when everything settles down, I'd like to maybe look at getting that into an MOU so it's an automatic aid action that we provide to the county. So thank you again.
Thank you. Mary Lucy, please, and my last request will be Eric Greening.
Mary Lucy, Oceano resident. I'd just like to make a few clarifications since I didn't go visit the area. I happen to live in the area. And so I did get a view of it 24/7. The island, the lagoon, was at capacity going up to the fronts of people's homes 2 weeks before this storm hit. When the first rain came through, the lagoon, which we call the island, was already at capacity. The county got on TV and stated that the floodgates would automatically open. Well, anybody who's ever played in Oceano knows you can go down there and spin those gates, and you can physically open them. You let the thing go, and they slap shut. So no, what hasn't been mentioned here, it was a resident, not the county, not the state. It was a resident who came to the county and said, you have a beaver dam in front of the gates. They won't open. The island's at full capacity. There are 30 residents on the island. They're at full capacity. You have a sanitation district right outside the gate, looking over the island, knowing that there's no place for that water to go, knowing those gates were not open. 1 foot of water would have sent that island into a flood. The sanitation district should have contacted the county, because you have a very, very, very close relationship, and had said, there's a beaver dam blocking the gate. Get down here. 3 hours after that beaver dam was relocated, or however, the island drained. But too late. The sewer plant had already released a million gallons of raw sewage, stated in the paper. Raw sewage. I went down there myself. You could see the difference between the waters. I don't care what you report. I don't care how you downplay this. I was there. I lived there. The residents were the ones that notified the county. The island is full. It cannot take another 3 inches, 4 inches, or 6 inches. The minute the rain hit, the minute the sand district threw their hands up in the air and said, let it flow. Right, the island was underwater. We were already sandbagging before the second wave of water hit. So this is where we have man-made catastrophes. No coordination. This could have been eliminated in 3 hours. It was a woman who lives down facing the lagoon, whose husband used to be a director, who came and said, please, I beg of you, get down there and open those levees.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Greening, followed by John Wallace.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and Mr. Lichtenfels in his presentation talked about how customarily we don't fine the agencies that have these pollution overflows, these raw sewage overflows. We work collaboratively with them. I want to clarify that my intent in invoking Health and Safety Code 5412.5 has nothing to do with fines or anything punitive. It is very clear that this is without regard to intent or malice. There's no attempt, no need to establish intent, malice, guilt, or anything else. It is about any time such a release affects an area where water contact sports take place. And, you know, tourism is our county's biggest industry. You know that there are incorporated cities that are hostages to this situation of closed beaches. If we're talking about collaboration, we should certainly be talking about collaboration with everyone who's affected by this, without establishing guilt, without even accusing. We have a mechanism for making the county whole, making the county health department whole, for the costs of mitigation, for the costs of testing, for the cost of what's needed to do to deal with this situation until the beaches are clean again. Please invoke this Health and Safety Code 5412.5 so that we don't have to sacrifice other health department services, other county services, to meet this emergency. The overflow didn't come from the county. It came from other entities, and those other entities can make the county whole under this. I'd also like to make a couple of brief comments on the Arroyo Grande Creek Channel. I questioned the habitat conservation plan that was originally developed for modifications upstream, in that it stopped several miles short of the coast. Because it stopped several miles short of the coast, and because state parks is light years behind where they said they would be in terms of their own habitat conservation plan, there is no habitat conservation plan for that area. Anything that we do, whether it's under color of emergency or not, that affects a tidewater goby, the steelhead, or whatever, is a take, and we live with the consequences of that. We live with the consequences of that gap. And then finally, I'd just like to say that when we're looking at tight budget years and tempted to scrimp on water quality testing in environmental health, it can pay back many, many times over if we can gather the information that's needed to make ourselves whole under Health and Safety Code Section 5412.5. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Wallace, and my last request, Paul Deese, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Board. John Wallace, District Administrator for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. One of my main purposes of appearing here today was to make sure our coordination with you folks on the emergency proclamation would apply to the sanitation district, and our board now understands in talking with your OES that your proclamation does cover the local agencies, including the sanitation district. Obviously, we had our problems. It was one of the largest rain events that we've ever seen at our plant. The flooding was substantial, and to compound that, we did have electrical shortage that knocked out all of our large pumps, our influent pumps, for a period of time. We immediately started our large diesel bypass pump, but because the water was rising so fast within the plant, some of the valving that was necessary to pump full volume was not able to be turned open all the way until one of our employees, in fact, is our plant superintendent, actually waded into the headwork structure up to his chest to grab that valve, and he turned it open all the way. So we were able to pump from that time on. All the sewage that came into the plant was properly treated. We tested constantly during that period of time, and it did meet all the requirements going out through our outfall line. Unfortunately, as others have testified here, the lagoon was flooded substantially. When I arrived on site about 11:30 at the plant, I have a four-wheel drive truck. The truck barely made it through to the plant site. And we were not only taking water, of course, in through our truck sewers, but we were also taking floodwaters coming in from outside from the lagoon area, which we've not seen that before happen. So it was a very unusual event. In the old days, Harold Guyden, who lived in Oceana at the time, used to open the bar at the beach to let the Roy Granny Creek waters down. What happens, of course, when the floodgates, the flap gates close, lagoon backs up water into our plant and the area around it. So I would really suggest that we maybe look at some sort of a pre-planned permitting operation to breach that bar in the proper place. Many years ago, the bar did breach across our outfall line. We got an emergency permit from the county as well as coastal and fish and game and so forth to redirect that breach further to the south, or we were in danger of losing our outfall line at the time. So it's very important to coordinate where that bar breaches and to have it pre-planned. As Favo mentioned, there's other designs that can improve the outlet into the creek as well, and that is short of pumping, but at some point the county might want to consider some large flood pumps in that area to mitigate the problem. So anyhow, we're back in operation. We were back in full operation later that Sunday night, and we continue to be so.
John, I think you have a question for Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just like your comments and Pablo's as well about the management of the lagoon. There's public testimony about its height before the rain event. Is that is there something we need to be doing better there? And
I think some of the commenters were correct in that the flap gates were sealed by debris on the other side of the flap gates, and so the lagoon was backing up. We saw that evidence because there's a drainage ditch in front of our entrance to our plant that did show substantial high water in the ditch that normally would be relatively dry. So I think that the lagoon area was surcharged to a certain extent, but when that beaver dam or whatever it was removed by the county on Friday afternoon, the water level dropped. But I think that overall that there needs to be another look at flood strategy in the lagoon area there, both for the residential folks as well as the public agencies that operate in that area.
Is that something we can get in place in short term? Again, I keep looking for the future here. Past is done. We got to be moving forward.
I think the thing that helps automatically, as we found out on Sunday afternoon, as soon as the bar was breached, the water levels dropped almost instantly. And so that's a large part of emergency response, to be able to pre-plan, pre-approve, pre-permit that kind of an action by a public agency. It's just tremendously difficult to get it without, you know, pre-approving it.
I have staff's lights on. Do you want to comment on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to address Ms. Luzzi's comments. There seems to be some misunderstanding or interpretation about how those flap gates work. The flap gates are never locked closed. I got two calls from two irate citizens that called me several unhappy names regarding going down there and unlocking the flap gates. They are never locked closed. There's a chain and a lock that keeps them from being wound up and opened and locked open. If those gates would have not been locked so that someone could not open them and lock them open, there would have been about 6 to 7 feet higher water in that Meadow Lagoon, Meadow Creek area than they did see. And I just wanted to advise you also that we were aware that the water was coming up in the security court, the Meadow Creek area along the roads, about 2 weeks before this. We were out there. We had our foreman, our superintendent, every day. He went out there every day to measure the water level differences between the inlet and the outlet at the flap gates. And for that period of time, the difference in water elevation was about 2.5 inches. So there was nothing preventing water from coming out of the flap gates into the Rio Grande Creek except for the operation of the entire flood area, which was gaining water due to the rain in the system.
Thank you. Anything to add to that, John?
No, just there's been some comments about the amount of sewage that spilled. We, of course, have a lot of storage on site when the headworks pumps are not pumping. We also have storage in our trunk sewers that go back upstream, and we are, probably to health department's frustration, we're really calculating that spill volume as precisely as we can. We didn't want to make a knee-jerk reaction on it. We did, in some way, make a very excessive assessment for the purposes of reporting. We reported to CWICS, the regional board process, that a million gallons were spilled. It's not true. We're still evaluating that. The preliminary estimate was 110,000 gallons, and we will further refine that as time goes on. We're in the field. We're disinfecting places where manholes spilled. We're conducting interviews with folks who live adjacent to or may have noticed the manholes that would leak. We also believe that there was some manholes that were left open by we don't know who, but are pulled open to allow drainage to flow into our system, which further surcharged our system. So we're sealing our manholes. We're locking those manholes to prevent those kinds of things in the future.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Deese?
Good morning. Paul Deese, American Red Cross. I'm the manager of emergency services here in San Luis Obispo County. Just wanted to fill you in on Red Cross activities in relation to the Oceano and Guadalupe incidents. In the San Luis chapter, we staffed with 45 Red Cross volunteers and staff. We opened our disaster operations center Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and started the process to arrange for an evacuation shelter, which we opened on Sunday. Had both of those facilities open through Thursday afternoon. We served 25 families with cleanup kits, water, and what we call comfort kits down in the actual impacted area. We had 5 families that we housed in the shelter, most of them for 4 nights, some for 5. And we housed 5 families in, 2 families with special needs in hotels. We fed approximately 35 people per meal throughout the duration. The food was donated by Chili's, Old Juan's, Cantinas, McDonald's, and Starbucks, which all came forward and contacted us and offered food for the shelter operations. New Life Community Church sent their people home to get in their closets and get clothing for those people who had no dry clothes. And Meathead Movers arranged to move all of our equipment to set up the shelter. And we were just happy to be able to hear and serve.
Thank you very much. That concludes the public comment portion. I'll bring it back to the board if there's any further questions. If not, I'd entertain a motion.
Could I ask a quick question before we get
sure.
to the motion? Thank you. Mr. Honeycutt, regarding the list of road closures, I noticed that there wasn't one for Atascadero where Halcon Road completely washed out by the Salinas River, and so that is no longer passable. But that's in the city of Atascadero, but it goes the other side of the river is the county, and I'm curious to know if you're just indicating roads in the county system that are closed, or how you define that, because I noticed I didn't see Halcon Road, and I know that's out for the duration anyway.
The roads I listed did just, it was only intended to cover the county roads. We did not cover any city or state highways. The Halcon closes every winter, and I think everybody expects that. These are roads that were you wouldn't normally expect to be closed, except for when it's raining hard. So.
Thank you. And I think that, you know, it goes without saying, we'd really appreciate the efforts, of, especially of Public Works, that went out and worked throughout this whole rainy time period. But once again, this isn't the last time. These things are going to happen again and again. Not just flooding, but we have fires, we have earthquakes, and I can't stress enough the preparedness part of it. To prepare yourselves, don't wait for somebody to come take care of you. Take care of yourselves, and then when the help comes, it'll come. But you need to prepare yourselves for, and I talked to the Red Cross about that. They can give you information to tell you the time frames that you need to prepare yourself for and what you need to have in order to be prepared. Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make the motion to extend by resolution the proclamation of local emergency that was proclaimed by the County Administrator and Director of Emergency Services on December 21st, 2010.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Hill, seconded by Supervisor Patterson to extend the proclamation of emergency. Roll call, please.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes. That concludes the meeting for the day. Have a happy new year. We'll see you next year.